This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Joe Fortenbaugh, Shea Cornett here, rolling right along. Hour three here on B&H. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. 888-729-3776 is the phone number. That's 888-SAY-ESPN. The Dollar Shave Club six-blade razor brings noticeably smooth shave with six stainless steel blades for swift hair removal and a lubricating strip that keeps things smooth. Dollar Shave razors are sold at dollarshaveclub.com or in stores. So we're going to continue our NFL two-a-days. Earlier today, we talked about Russell Wilson's new team. That would be the Denver Broncos. My confusion, because that's what I associate him with. But now we're going to focus on his old team in the Seattle Seahawks.
This is ESPN Radio's NFL two-a-days. The Seattle Seahawks.
It was time. It was time for the Seahawks to go their own way and for Russell Wilson to do the same thing.
What Seattle's getting in return, Drew Lock, Noah Fant, Shelby Harris, double ones, double twos. This is the foundation that the Seahawks will use going forward.
The schedule's tough. Nobody travels more miles this year than Seattle. It's already tough to travel out of Seattle. They have to go, I think, to Germany to play Tampa Bay this season.
Hey, maybe it'll be a nice distraction for the Seattle Seahawks to be overseas in Germany as opposed to going to Tampa Bay. I don't know, but I think that's the way the season might shake out. Again, two-a-days continuing here with the Seattle Seahawks on Barton Hahn. And, of course, they move on from Russell Wilson. No longer their life, it felt like lifelong, their longtime quarterback there in Seattle. And now there's a quarterback competition going on between Drew Lock and Geno Smith. Yay. Best chance to win, Drew Lock, Geno Smith. You take your pick, Joe. Who you taking?
I'd probably say C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. Those would be the quarterbacks from Ohio State and Alabama who Seattle will likely be drafting after the decision to go with either Lock or Smith lands them with the first overall pick in next year's draft. I don't think it really matters which direction they go. We know what we have in Lock. We know what we have in Smith. You're in a bad situation. What's the old saying? If you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks.
Yep.
The Seahawks have no quarterbacks. So ultimately, what are you going to do? I would be concerned more than anything about DK Metcalf, the star wide receiver, because this is going to get bad. It's going to get really bad. And we know how it goes for wide receivers when they can't get the ball. They can't score. They can't put up their numbers. They start to get frustrated. They start to get disgruntled. And that's happened previously with Metcalf, despite the fact that he had Russell Wilson and a pretty good football team at his disposal. So it doesn't matter who they go with. If you're Seattle, you're probably quietly thinking which one will lose more games to give us a better draft position. But when you look at what they're facing in their division, the defending Super Bowl champion Rams, the San Francisco 49ers, who if Trey Lance can develop into a starting quarterback, they're going to be nasty because they play great defense and can run the ball as well as anybody. And then you got an Arizona team that should threaten at least 500, dysfunction or not, with what's going on with the Murray contract. Tough sledding for Seattle to grind out any victories this year.
And you already saw the writing on the wall, even when they had Russell Wilson under center there in Seattle, a year or two ago when that article came out when Russell wanted to trade out of Seattle and he made the list. I mean, this is when we saw things were kind of coming unhinged there in Seattle, and now it's all coming to fruition. Agree with you, Joe. DK Metcalf is the one. I thought by now he would be traded if that's what they were going to decide to do. Clearly not. And so what does that mean for him in this upcoming season? Is he just going to pad his stats, and then next year we're talking about him going somewhere else, maybe Chicago? That would be perfectly fine. Also, on the defensive side of the ball, you no longer have Bobby Wagner. And for so long, the identity of that Seahawks team was, yes, of course, their quarterback, and we joke about let Russ cook. But he wasn't really cooking in the beginning, especially when they won their first Super Bowl. We were very reliant, obviously, on the defense and running the football, and all that has kind of gone out the window. When you lose Bobby Wagner on the defensive side of the ball, that defensive unit is going to take a big dip as well.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, those were your identity players. Like, Russ and Bobby Wagner were the identity of your team. They were the only guys left from the Legion of Boom era, and that's it. That's it. So it's clear that the rebuild is on. I don't know if Pete Carroll is going to be the long-term fixture for them moving forward. Like, once you decide where you're going to go, is a 70-plus-year-old Pete Carroll the guy you want leading the charge into the new era? I mean, this team essentially for years under Russell Wilson, it was fascinating to me how many offensive coordinators they went through. Now, normally, if you're losing offensive coordinators because you have a great quarterback, it's because you're doing so well offensively, these guys are taking head coaching gigs. That wasn't necessarily the case with everybody in Seattle. They just couldn't find a way to get the most out of Russell Wilson. They did so much running early, then they eventually turned it over to him, but these offenses could not put together 17, 18-week seasons routinely. And you had so many problems with that. So one, that's why I'm fascinated to see Russ in a new situation. And two, I have no idea what to make. I'd say this for Seattle. They do have a favorable situation in that it's very difficult to get to Seattle to play them. That is a long flight. And they have several games this year against teams where they will be hosting East Coast teams. I believe the Jets, the Giants, the Falcons. I even think the Panthers travel there. Those are all going to be opportunities for wins, but they're going to have to get some consistent, competent play out of the quarterback position if that's going to come to fruition.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but when your quarterback room looks like Drew Lock and Geno Smith, and no offense to these guys, but I think there's a reason that they have been slotted. Drew Lock, I know, was a starter for Denver, obviously, but there's a reason he wasn't the long-term solution, so it could be tough sledding out of the gates. Now, the NFL scheduling this year, I don't know, if, again, with the recency bias, if I'm just feeling this because I'm, like, anticipating the start of the season, but it feels like there's so many good matchups week one, and obviously, even though Seattle's going to have a down year, and the Denver Broncos are going to win this game on Monday Night Football, it still is intriguing because it's Broncos and Seattle opening the season, obviously, with Russell Wilson coming to town with his new team. In that game, the Seahawks over under in their win total is 6. But I just think that the scheduling, we obviously talked about the Carolina Panthers and the Browns, everyone facing their former teams, is so good this year. How do you see this first game, week one, going? Because to me, I think this could be a bloodbath for Seattle.
I think it will be a Broncos blowout, and I think that Russell Wilson will be 16-1 to win the MVP award before that game, and then I think his numbers will be adjusted immediately after that game. So if you want to get a better price, this would be the game. There's going to be a lot of focus on this game, a lot of attention. Russ is going to shred them. They're going to put up big numbers, and after that, people are going to realize, or at least think to themselves, oh my God, take a look at this offense. Take a look at Russell Wilson with the Broncos. This is the team to beat. So that's going to be one of the top storylines after. But remember, it's just beating up on Seattle, who's not a very good football team. This is very eerie to what we saw in week one last year when the Rams hosted, I believe it was the Bears in week one, and Matthew Stafford just tore apart that Chicago defense. Stafford's MVP.
Again, Joe, are we really doing this again?
It's a great analogy, though, isn't it? I mean, it is like the perfect analogy for what we're talking about right now. He tore apart the Bears. His MVP odds dropped from like 25-1 to 20-1 to right after that. I think the same thing is going to happen here. I'd love to believe Seattle's got something in them. But I mean, if you're in that Seattle crowd for that game that night, who are you rooting for? You're standing up, you're rooting for Seattle, but you also, that's your guy on the other side.
Yeah, no.
You're going to try to make it hostile, but I don't know if that building is capable of getting as loud as it used to back in the Legion of Boom days.
Yeah, and look, there are few quarterbacks or players in professional sports where they leave a team and that city still loves them. Like Matthew Stafford, as you just pointed out, that's one. Like Detroit still loves Matthew Stafford. Like we saw the jerseys, obviously, around Super Bowl time with the Lions jersey, Stafford on the back. You know, like people still cheering for him. Seattle should be in that same boat as well. Like they should be cheering for Russell Wilson for all that he did for that town. And also, just to add to the Matthew Stafford, he was very familiar with that Bears team, and that's why he carved them up. So just chill on that analogy. All right, coming up, a former Seahawk is going to weigh in on their future without Russell Wilson and what that week one matchup might look like. That's after Joe tells you about Granger.
For all the ones who get it done, Granger is here for you, and they are always there to help. Granger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, along with 24/7 support, experienced staff, and curbside pickup at over 250 local branches. And you can get free access to product specialists ready to help you track down hard-to-find items. Plus, Granger's commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Barton Hahn rolling right along here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Shea Cornett, Joe Fortenbaugh here, 2-a-days, and we already hit the Denver Broncos. Now we moved on to the Seattle Seahawks, and we are presented by Progressive Insurance. And so to discuss more about the Seattle Seahawks, let's bring in KJ Wright, former Seahawks linebacker, 11-year NFL veteran. Of course, he played his first decade with Seattle last year with the Raiders. And so, KJ, we've talked a lot about how this Seahawks team, unfortunately, is going to take a big dip this year because their quarterback, Russell Wilson, is no longer there. Instead, there's a quarterback competition going on there between with Geno Smith and Drew Lock. Who do you see starting week one when they have to go up against their former quarterback in Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos?
Well, first of all, I don't think they're going to take a big dip. Let's give Coach Carroll some respect. This man has done it for a while. True. Super Bowl caliber coach. I believe this team is going to be just fine. But if I have to put my money on it, it's going to be Geno Smith as week one starter. He has the most experience between both him and Drew. He's familiar with the playbook, familiar with DK and with Tyler. And so the man has really got something to prove. He has not gotten off to a great start in his NFL career, but now is his chance to take this team. You have plenty of weapons. You got the coach. You got a decent defense on the other side of the ball. Geno, this is your year to take it over, and I'm excited to see him make it happen.
You know, when it comes to DK Metcalf, you have a legitimate bona fide star at wide receiver. How do you think he handles the transition from Russ to Geno or Drew if his production starts to drop off? I mean, at the very core, all you guys are competitors. You want to make big plays. You want to roll up stats. You want to win games. If he's not getting the ball enough, could that end up becoming a problem?
That's why I hope that DK gets his contract before this season starts. I mean, him and Russell had unreal chemistry. Russell had great chemistry with Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett, Jermaine Kearse, even with DK. I hope DK gets his money before the season starts because we don't know. We simply don't know if Geno wants to feature the tight ends more, if Geno is connected to slot receivers more. And so if he doesn't get the ball early and he doesn't get his contract, I'm a little nervous for the Seahawks because it could be some stuff in the locker room. It could be stuff on the sidelines during game day to where if it doesn't go in his way, then especially if you don't have a contract, it could get a little ugly.
Talking to KJ Wright right now, former Seattle linebacker, and we're doing our 2-a-days now with the Seattle Seahawks. And, you know, we were talking a little bit about earlier, and Joe brought it up about Pete Carroll and, you know, very old coach in the league, and yes, he's been there and done that, and I know you said, KJ, you don't feel like this team is going to take a dip, albeit without Russell Wilson, but the truth of the matter is it's kind of a turning of the tide in terms of the quarterback position and what this team is going to look like going forward. Do you think Pete Carroll is the guy to continue to lead them as they kind of make this transition?
Absolutely. The man, he's young. You say he's old, but the man is really young in his brain. His energy is still on 100. He's still enthusiastic about what he's doing. He's really, really excited about turning this team around and getting them back to where he knows they can be. And so he's starting over. Anyone with any Super Bowl experience, anybody with any Super Bowl pass, is out the building. So he has the opportunity to groom these guys, to teach them the philosophy he wants to implement in them, get the young guys going, start bringing new veterans up, new leadership is going to be implemented into that building. So this is clearly his team. It's clearly Coach Carroll's team and how he wants to get this thing done. And I believe that he has all the tools and the coaching staff to get this team turned around.
You know, naturally, so much of the focus was on the departure of Russell Wilson, but Bobby Wagner is wearing a new uniform as well this season. What's that loss like for the defense? You've played alongside him. I mean, Wagner was playing at a high level for a very long time. He's also a leader on the team. What's that going to mean for the Seahawks?
That's the biggest blow for this Seahawks team, losing Bobby. The man was just, he was the leader of that team. Bobby was the leader of the team. He was the voice. He gave the pregame speeches. He was phenomenal on game days. A walking Hall of Famer. Bobby leaving that building is really going to hurt this team. And so it's going to be up to Jordan Brooks. Not to put any pressure on him, but Jordan Brooks is going to have to step into that middle and try to, you know, be the one that get everyone lined up. He has the green dot, making all the calls, making all the checks. And so if he can step up and, you know, fill Bobby's shoes, then I believe that this team can definitely keep progressing and, you know, turning and making a good turn to get this team turned around.
Bart and Han on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, Joe Fortenbaugh, Shea Cornett filling in for the guys today, talking to KJ Wright, former Seahawks linebacker. And we're continuing our two-a-days here. Earlier, we did the Denver Broncos, and now we're doing the Seattle Seahawks. And KJ, these two teams are going to meet week one. And obviously, this creates so much drama. Doesn't matter what these two teams end up being come the end of the season, but obviously, the Russell Wilson story here is what makes this so intriguing. If you could look into your crystal ball, tell me what that week one matchup is going to look like between the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, first of all, the NFL messed this up. You don't make this game week one. I want to see this game like week four, week five. Just let it build up. Let Russell find his groove. Let's see who the Seahawks really are. And then you drop the Monday night game on us in primetime football. But regardless, I'm really excited to watch this game. I know that, here's the thing, Coach Carroll has the blueprint to Russell Wilson's success and his failures, right? Uh-huh. So I'm really intrigued to see what kind of game plan does Coach Carroll put together. He's seen Russ struggle in certain coverages and certain pass rushes. Let's see how great Coach Carroll is when it comes to game planning against his former quarterback. But I know Russell. I know Russell knows that Coach Carroll knows that. So he's probably practicing that all offseason, all training camp. And so he's going to come in on fire. He's going to come in with those weapons that he has and Melvin Gordon and Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. It's supposed to be a prime time, really fun matchup. But if I had to pick who's going to win, I'm going to have to say I think Russell will come in and get a dub. I'm going to pull for Russell on this one. So it's going to be fun to watch.
As you take a look at the NFC West stacked division, you got the defending champs as the Vegas favorites to go ahead and repeat winning the division. You've got the Niners, who are intriguing with Trey Lance possibly stepping into the role of the starting quarterback. Arizona should be formidable if they can figure out everything in the DeAndre Hopkins suspension. I want to focus on the Niners for a bit. What's the ceiling with Trey Lance? Because there are a lot of unknown variables there. The athleticism's through the roof, but we haven't seen much of him at the pro level, and that's going to be a big question for that team entering this season.
Here's the thing. This is the team that was in the NFC Championship last year with, in my mind, a good quarterback. You ride with Jimmy G. I know that Trey Lance is someone that you traded up to get. He's someone that you drafted really high in the draft. But if the man's not ready, he's not ready. You don't want to take this team who's in prime position to go to the Super Bowl and hand it off to essentially a rookie quarterback. And so we're going to see how it all unfolds with Jimmy G. If I'm the Niners, I'm keeping him. Because I've seen Trey Lance last year when he got some playing time. I've seen him when he was a scout team quarterback. Saw him in OTAs. If the guy's not ready, you ride with Jimmy G and you sprinkle him in here and there throughout the season. But it'll be really interesting to see how it all unfolds.
KJ Wright, thanks so much for the time. I'm going to put you up against it really quick here before we say goodbye. How many wins do the Seattle Seahawks get this season?
Eight wins.
Not bad.
Eight wins is pretty generous.
Vegas is saying six, and the schedule, they're going to travel more than anybody, especially giving up a home game going over to Germany. So I think there's a lot working against them, right around six. I go under your eight, but you know them better than I do. I think that's intriguing. You've definitely got me thinking.
Yeah, I don't know if eight's going to be enough.
Call me in the middle of the season. We'll see where we're at.
All right.
KJ, thanks, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
See ya. That's KJ Wright, former Seahawks linebacker. And Joe, I thought it was interesting when I started the question out just speaking like I was talking to anybody, and obviously not realizing that, well, I realized who I was talking to, but not realizing how my words probably sounded to him. But the fact that he said he didn't think the Seahawks was going to take that big of a dip. Now, you already said that Vegas has them pegged at six wins. He says eight wins. This Seahawks squad, take last year out of it, is accustomed to getting double digit wins. Wouldn't we consider that a dip right there?
It would be, yeah. But I would say this. If they found a way to eight, given the strength of the division, given what they've lost, given what the current perception is of them, that would be a very successful season, winning eight games with either Drew Lock, Geno Smith, or both. I think there were a lot of things KJ Wright said in that interview that are worth paying attention to. Very high praise for Pete Carroll being able to get the job done in the post-Russell Wilson era. That's something to consider. Another one you have to consider, it almost seemed like he was making the case that Bobby Wagner was the bigger loss than Russ. I'm not obviously going so far as to say that's what he said, but he really did drive home the point that losing that leadership and that talent on defense was going to be a blow to that team. Remember that when you try to evaluate them, because all the focus is on Russell Wilson, but when you lose the lifeblood of your defense, someone who has done it as consistently at a high level as Bobby Wagner has all these years, and oh, by the way, he went to your division rival who just won the Super Bowl in the Los Angeles Rams, that's got to be accounted for as well.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the quarterback of the offense, which is what Russell Wilson was, but obviously Bobby Wagner was that of the defense, right? The blood, the lifeline, the guy who's giving those pregame speeches. When you lose both of those on both sides of the ball, I don't know how a team couldn't take a dip. And now you've already alluded to how competitive that division is. Even if you split, let's just say, which I don't think is going to happen, but even if you split with every team that you have to face twice in your division, and then all the other outside factors in the rest of your schedule, and I'm talking about outside factors, what you alluded to, the travel being completely stacked against them and not in their favor this season, to me, that just doesn't equate to a team not taking a significant dip. This Seattle Seahawks fan base is accustomed to being in the postseason, to competing ultimately for championships. Now, I don't think anyone's going to be doing that this year, and if they do, this will be the biggest surprise in the NFL so far this season. But I do think that it would be very head-scratching if this Seahawks squad just doesn't miss a beat. I know you're probably going to have DK Metcalf there and Tyler Lockett and some of these weapons that, yes, you're accustomed to having, but if you don't have the same guy who's used to throwing to them or talking to them in the huddle, there has to be some sort of drop-off. Let's go to Scott in New York here. Again, we're taking your calls, 888-729-3776. Scott's in New York. What do you think about eight wins there, Scott?
Look, not at all. Listen, I mean, I respect J.J. Wright, but listen, to come up with something like that, these guys are not getting 8 wins. Like I said, then you just hit the primary thing right there. They don't have nobody getting them the ball. Metcalf and Lockett, those guys, they're not going to get the ball like they usually get it, you know? And I'm pushing for Geno because I want to see him, like your other colleague said. He has the weapons now, so maybe he can catapult himself. But they're not getting 8 wins. I'm giving them 5-6 tops.
Yeah. I mean, 6 even sounds generous to me, to be quite honest, Joe. Really,
I mean, just think of it like this. We see this in sports all the time. You have these franchises who rise, they maintain, and then they fall. That's where we're at with Seattle. I really don't think it requires that much analysis to understand what's happening here. They built something up with a rookie quarterback in Russell Wilson and an elite defense. They went to 2 Super Bowls. They won one of them. They should have won the other, but that's a story for another day with that argument. Yeah. They consistently made the playoffs. They made life hell for the Green Bay Packers. They were a great team. And now all the key members of that defense are gone. Russell Wilson, the quarterback, is gone. Marshawn Lynch is gone. It's just a new era, and they do not have a competent, high-level quarterback stepping in for Russell Wilson, so this is what it is. It is a team that is about to go through a real downturn. If you are in that front office right now, your job is to make that downturn as brief as possible before you start the rise again. That's got to be the goal in Seattle. If you're thinking about winning 8 or 9 games this year, your head's probably in the wrong place because that's not going to happen.
Well, that's just what you're accustomed to, and I agree with you. Your head's clearly in the wrong place. Earlier today, we were reacting to Jeremy Fowler's top 10 quarterback list. Drew Lock and Geno Smith are not on it. And neither is Lamar Jackson, which I think is the craziest part of it all. That MVP, he was completely excluded. We'll talk about it next. Plus, there's a name not on the list. But the question is he going to actually get there? This is Bart and Han on ESPN Radio.
Bart and Han.
We're talking earlier about Jeremy Fowler's top 10 quarterback list, the guys that were left out. But what about the guys that maybe will make their way onto it in years to come? Or maybe there'll be some that never actually do. It's Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio. Joe Fortenbaugh, Shea Cornett here filling in for the guys. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If you want to join the conversation in terms of what young quarterbacks could find their way into any top 10 QBs in the NFL list later on, maybe in a few years to come, join the convo, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. They're close, convenient, and known for guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every single day. Okay, so Jeremy Fowler's top 10 quarterback list. I read it earlier, but at this point, I don't know that the order is what's important. At number 9 was Deshaun Watson. Missing from the list, from the top 10 at least, was Lamar Jackson, who was at number 11. On the outside looking in. Obviously, Joe, this is what you and I were talking about earlier. Couldn't believe it. A little head-scratching, considering Deshaun Watson hasn't played in a year and might not play for another year. We'll find out hopefully sometime this week. But now the question shifts to, will any of these young quarterbacks, specifically the ones that we talked about a lot in last year's draft. The Trevor Lawrences, the Zach Wilsons, the Trey Lances, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. This was a quarterback class we pegged as being the best ever, or the best since the 80s, or the best this and that. And really, Mac Jones is the one we all walked away saying, there might be something there. The rest remains to be seen, or does it? Like, will a guy like Zach Wilson ever be on this top 10 QB list? Could you even tell that right now?
That's an interesting question, because based on what we saw last season, it was a struggle. But it's expected to be a struggle for most rookies. Every now and again, you have the rookie who comes out, who plays really well. He shows you he's got the goods. And then all of a sudden, every other rookie is graded against him. And if that rookie doesn't perform to that standard, then he's clearly a failure. But look at the situation that Wilson, Lawrence, some of these other guys went into. Bad football teams, bad rosters, lots of pressure. The game gets much faster. Rookie head coaches who hadn't coached a down in the NFL as a head coach in Urban Meyer in Jacksonville, which was as dysfunctional as could be, and Robert Saleh with the Jets, who was getting his feet wet. So I take everything I saw last season. There's stuff you can use to evaluate, but you got to build around these kids and give them an opportunity. I think this is where we start to find out whether or not they have the goods from year one to year two, because if you're still making the same mistakes, if you still look just as lost, that's going to be a major problem. I think the most interesting guy of the group you mentioned, Trey Lance in San Francisco. His situation is incredible. Think of his head coach, Kyle Shanahan, a premier offensive mind that knows how to run the ball as well, if not better, than any coach in the NFL. That takes a lot of the burden off your shoulders. And Lance is athletic. He can run. He can put stats up in that department, much like the aforementioned Lamar Jackson. He's got Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and George Kittle at his disposal in the passing game. A fantastic unit. So I think Lance has a very bright future and a very high upside if he can progress very quickly. As for your boy Zach Wilson, seems like he's got a lot going on off the field these days, Shay. As I'm trying to work through a lot of what's going on Twitter here as well. He's got a lot going on off the field these days. You got to figure he's got to get the head right if he's going to come into New York and make plays next season.
Yeah, off the field. Not the typical off-the-field issues that we are usually talking about here on the airwaves. And it's okay. Amber and I feel like, have filled in or rotated for all these shows for the past couple of months. I totally get it. Here's the thing I'll say about Trey Lance. And look, I agree with you. When you're drafted this high in the draft, it's because your team's not good. It's because there's usually a coaching change that comes with it. There's a reason these quarterbacks go to stinky teams, and then you have to build around them. So take a first year and throw it out the window. It doesn't matter. And Mac Jones only looked capable because I thought that was the most complete roster, and we were so unaccustomed to seeing a Bill Belichick team in the first round of the draft go out and do something like this. It was no surprise that it all came back down to earth in the postseason for Mac Jones and this Patriots squad. Now, all of that to say, the Trey Lance situation is so weird to me because they gave up so much to go get him. I mean, we're not talking about like what they did with Justin Fields. You know, they traded away a first round pick and moved up with the Giants, whatever, big deal. But I mean, for Trey Lance, they gave away multiple first round picks. They dove in like this was going to be their next Tom Brady there with the 49ers. And now you might have a situation where they keep Jimmy Garoppolo and he's on the bench another year looking at a backup role when you gave up that much to go get him. And it's confusing to me. I mean, last year, Trey Lance, he only had a QBR of 33, 53 for Jimmy G, the guy they want to ship out of town. He only had a completion percentage of 58%. This was not a guy that stepped into a situation and performed at the highest of levels. Now, came from a smaller school, still getting adjusted to the playbook, whatever. But there's got to be some sort of onus that we never put on Kyle Shanahan and this Niners team if it doesn't work out with Trey Lance. And I do wonder, there was all this trade stuff about Jimmy Garoppolo. Maybe Trey Lance just isn't ready. He's not that dude. And they can't foresee him going into a situation and carrying this team that's accustomed to being in the postseason. He can't do it yet. And so they need to keep Jimmy G on this roster. The original question was, which guy do I think will be on this top 10 list one day? And while I want to say Justin Fields with all my heart, because I'm from Chicago and I'm a Bears fan, I actually think it's going to be Trevor Lawrence.
Yes.
This was the next coming to. This was the guy that we were... I mean, quite honestly, I hadn't remembered a draft pick or a college prospect as big as Trevor Lawrence ever. And I've been covering sports outside of college for over a decade now. And so Trevor Lawrence to me now, hopefully with the right coaching staff, with some help around him, with some clarity and not distraction down there in Jacksonville, I do hope that he is that guy, because I think that he is the one that is most capable of being in this top 10 list when all is said and done.
A lot of weapons around him, smart quarterback, there's some opportunity. And with Doug Peterson taking over as the head coach, remember what Doug Peterson got out of Carson Wentz.
Yes.
Right? People look at Carson Wentz now and they think, man, that guy's a complete disaster. Peterson got a lot out of that guy very early in his career. If he was able to do that, I could understand why he was the guy for the job in Jacksonville. What the Jaguars need is just some stability. Things need to quiet down. You can't consistently have drama at every turn, every week, and expect to win games. You need to be quiet. Have you ever looked at the Pittsburgh Steelers? Things are relatively quiet week to week. Sure, they've had some drama over the years when you go back to Plaxico Burress, Santonio Holmes, things like that, but they eventually get rid of those guys. Antonio Brown, they get rid of those guys, and they move on from the problem. When you're making headlines every single week because of dysfunction in the locker room, you're not winning games. You're not winning games, and I think at least Peterson comes to Jacksonville this year and he can quiet things down. The Jags don't need to win 10 games. They can win 5, they can win 6, and it can be a success as long as the franchise quarterback shows some development and takes the next step.
And hey, you were talking about the AFC South earlier, and this could be a down division. You think maybe one of the worst in the NFL. If Tennessee takes a step back, the Houston Texans are right around that five wins as well, and then Jacksonville takes a step forward. This could be the year where they capitalize on a division that isn't as strong as it has been in years past. We'll see. Coming up, a huge series for one division leader starts tonight, and a surprise team has emerged in the wild card race. We go to baseball next, right here on Bart and Han on ESPN Radio.
Bart and Han.
Earlier today, Jeremy Fowler released a top 10 quarterback list that is stirring up a little bit of controversy for a lot of reasons. It goes like this: Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Tom Brady, Joe Burrow, Matt Stafford, Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson at 9, and then Dak Prescott at 10. There's no Lamar Jackson there in that top 10, but then, of course, thinking forward, are there any young quarterbacks that could make their way onto this top 10 top QB list in the future? That's what we were asking earlier. Maybe a guy like Zach Wilson or Mac Jones. Rob's in New Jersey. What do you think about this top 10 list? What does it have you thinking about, Rob?
Well, hey, Joe, can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Yes. Listen, do us a favor. Tell Shea Cornett to rip that list up and let me explain. Here's the thing. When you have top 10 of anything, that means anybody that could win the whole thing, the top 10 quarterbacks that could win the whole thing. And for you to leave Lamar Jackson off the list in favor of Deshaun Watson, who hasn't played in like a year and a half or some change, and have Dak in there and not have Kyler Murray, that doesn't make, just like she said, none of that makes any sense to me. So listen, man, just tell her, rip that list in two. The same way Lil Wayne ripped up that picture of that Rolls Royce Phantom and that music video, I'm So Hood remix, ripped it up in two. Listen, because it makes absolutely no sense. So before the show is over, I want to hear an audio of some paper ripping of that list, because that list makes absolutely no sense. Thanks for my call.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate it. Go on, Joe. You can tell me. Tell me to rip it up.
Rip that list up. Rip that list up. Metaphorically, figuratively, however you're going to do it.
Dude's like
doing it digitally all day.
Dude's acting like it's Shay's list.
I know. I'm like, I didn't write this, Jeremy Fowler. I'm just delivering the news here.
And by the way, pal, she's right here. Tell her yourself.
I know. I was thinking that, too. I'm like, you can just tell me. But if you want Joe to be the middleman, that's fine, too.
It was good theater. It was good theater. He's smart the way he went about that. The whole production piece there, very nicely done.
I know. I agree with you. But the list is perplexing to a lot of people. Unless you're a Packers fan and you're you know, your quarterback sitting there at number one, you're like, yeah, the rest of the list doesn't matter. But to the rest of us out here in the world, we're looking at this list and going, why is Deshaun Watson at number 9? That is crazy to me. And I think the other one, obviously, the more we talk about it today, Joe, the more I think about it, is the fact that Dak Prescott's on that top 10 list, too. Why is he worthy of being there?
How Dak slides on when he's the most controversial guy in the league and Jackson slides off and no one mentions it until now is incredible to me. Absolutely incredible that no one's going after Prescott here.
I'm with you on that. We'll talk more about this list and other things. We've got more Bart and Han coming your way, coming up momentarily here. Joe Fortenbaugh and Shea Cornett. More Bart and Han coming your way.
Bart and Han.
Now, we're talking about going back to Cali, but ironically here, we're not really talking about any of the teams in the California area, but that is okay. Let's shift gears and move on to baseball a little bit here. Barton on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, Joe Fortenbaugh, Shea Cornett here with you. We're presented by Progressive Insurance here on ESPN Radio. Get renter's insurance to protect the things that make your place a home, including coverage for theft or damage. Visit progressive.com. Last night, Yankees, Red Sox, and yesterday I was on the radio, Joe, and I was talking obviously a lot about this rivalry and what it means not only to baseball and to Yankees fans and to Red Sox fans, but obviously to the sports world as well. There's not a lot of rivalries in professional sports anymore that means something to people that's not their team that they root for. This means something to people despite the fact that they play so often. And now they split the series. The Red Sox won last night. They beat the Yankees. Mets and Braves begin a big three-game series tonight. The Mets lead in the NL East has now dwindled from 10.5 games to 1.5 games. Yankees are off today. They're coming off a series split, obviously, with the Red Sox, as I just said. And so now as we start to get ready for the All-Star break, and that means the second half of the season, and I think if you weren't paying attention to baseball, perhaps after the All-Star game is when you really start to do that because your favorite teams kind of start to make a push. Yankees and Mets are probably the most interesting to me just because we haven't seen two New York teams be this dominant in a really long time. But which one's got the staying power is the question, Joe.
I'm intrigued by the Mets, and that's not to knock the Yankees. I'll get to them in a second because I think both are legit. But when it comes to the Mets, right now people are focused on the fact that they had this huge division lead that they let slip away. It's not so much that they let it slip away. It's that Atlanta played one of the easiest schedules in Major League Baseball for like more than a month, and they were able to take advantage of it. And kudos to Atlanta. That's what you've got to be able to do. But moving forward, the Mets have a top 10 schedule when it comes to easy the rest of the way out. All right, they're one of the 10 easiest schedules the rest of the way. DeGrom's coming back. Max Scherzer's already back looking good. Steve Cohen is an owner who's going to want to spend at the trade deadline. He's going to get aggressive. This Mets team has a lot to offer. I think they've got a good price right now to not only win the division, but to win the National League. I look around the National League. Yes, there's the Dodgers. Who else? Possibly San Diego if Tatis gets healthy.
Why not the Braves?
I just think that a lot of what we're seeing right now, you're buying high on the Braves. I think if we look at these as stock prices, you're buying high on the Braves. They just rip through a bunch of bad teams and put up a great record. And you can only beat who's in front of you. I understand that. But I think they're a little overinflated right now as you assess. When you look at the Yanks, I mean, it always comes down to the playoffs with the Yanks.
Yeah.
Like I'm not the least bit concerned about whether or not they can score runs, whether or not they can pitch. I would be a little concerned that you let those last two games against Boston get away from you because you had a really good chance in a four-game sweep and you completely blew it, but that's a story for another day. Ultimately, the Yanks will be judged by what they do in the postseason. They should get there. They should be fine, but they've got to find a way to close this time around. They got to win the AL. The deck is set. Houston looks good. There's obviously some talent there, but the White Sox aren't anywhere near what they were supposed to be, and that's a big advantage when you look at the hierarchy of the American League.
The Yankees right now sit at 61-25. We're approaching the All-Star break. To me, biggest question mark, can Aaron Judge stay healthy? If Aaron Judge can stay healthy for this Yankees team, I'll pencil him into the postseason all day long. He is what makes this engine go. And the way he's playing this year, if he can stay in that same realm, man, this Yankees team is dangerous. But you mentioned perhaps they should have concerns because they gave two games away against the Red Sox. But did they? Let's hear from Buster Olney, our ESPN baseball insider this morning. He was on KJM. Take a listen.
No, if you're the Yankees, you're not concerned. They're playing great. I do think the big question is going to be, and we've already seen subtle adjustments by Aaron Boone using that huge lead. You know, in Thursday's game, Aaron Judge had a little calf issue, and so he didn't play. He probably would have played if they had a two-game lead instead of 15 the last couple of days. He's not using relievers in back-to-back days anymore, which is smart because there's no point in stressing out your pitching as we go down the stretch.
So Buster basically saying that there was no need to panic there and worry about your pitching because there's so much baseball still ahead of them. And by the way, these Yankees and Red Sox, what do they play each other, like 15 times? I mean, I'm making up, it's something like that, though. So these rivalry
minimum
games,
4.5 hours.
Yeah, right. These rivalry games, there's not as much juice to them. If you can save some of your pitching, you might as well do that. But to me, the Yankees are the bigger story because of what they're doing. Really, defensively, they're hitting, they're pitching, everything. And again, I go back to Aaron Judge's staying healthy, not only for the Yankees' sake, but for his contract's sake, too. Millions of dollars riding on this season for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he is delivering in a big, big way. If you're New York, you've got to be looking at that situation thinking, we probably could have saved a few bucks if we had gotten this done before the start of the season. But then you ask yourself, would Judge be delivering in this way? He's clearly hungry. He clearly wants the big deal. He's seen what Lindor and Harper and Machado and all these guys have gotten over the years. And that's just a few who were signed in the last few years. There's so many big paydays out there to be had. He wants to be the next one, and he's delivering like it this season.
Hey, the AL East, though, is interesting. Yankees, Red Sox, we just hit on. Rays are good. Blue Jays are good. And let's not count out these Orioles. They're hovering right around 500. They have taken such a leap from years ago, not even last year, but go on the year before that and beyond. They're 18.5 games behind the Yankees. They've won 8 straight, and they are not slowing down. I'm impressed by this Orioles squad, and quite frankly, if they were in any other division besides the AL East, we'd be talking about them, I think, for a wild card spot because they're that good.
They redid, I believe, what was it, left field at Camden Yards, and the Orioles are 25-17 at home. They might just blow the whole thing up and rebuild next season if every single change to the stadium produces that many wins. I cannot believe how fast they have turned it around. They were a punching bag. For years, the big joke was always betting under their season win total, which was like 64 games. Over under 64 wins, you'd bet under and you'd have no problem. And this year, they're cooking 43-44, minus 14 run differential. Keep an eye on that. But they're one of the best stories in baseball this year.
No doubt about it. And I'll say it again. Any other division, we'd be talking more about them. It's just the fact that they play in the AL East and all the teams in front of them have potential to be really good and to beat the other one. We saw it obviously with the Yankees and Red Sox splitting last night. But the Orioles hovering around 500 and winning 8 in a row means a lot for that squad, as Joe just said, that has been bottom feeders for a really long time. And everyone taking the under year in and year out. Not so much this year. All right, it's been a fun day here on Barton Hall. On Joe Fortenbaugh, Shea Cornett filling in for the guys, and it was a good time. I think we hit everything today, Joe, didn't we?
Absolutely. It was a pleasure working with you, Shea. Looking forward to doing it again down the line.
Yeah, same to you, buddy. Coming up next is Canty and Carlin. Everyone enjoy the rest of your Monday. We got the rest of the week to go get it. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN+. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.